I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things.
I was chatting to Gordon Murray the other week, which... Yeah, I know. Just thought I'd drop that in there. And I realised when we were filming, I always feel like I can sort of say anything to him because he's quite quiet and focused. He does actually look at you and listen to you. Yeah. And I used the term grower, not shower with him. And I wasn't sure whether it was appropriate.
in the context that it might normally be used or another one?
No, in the context of actually, I was stood next to his new car.
Which has been announced, yes.
The T33. And I was stood next to it, having had probably had half an hour looking at it before he walked in. And I referred to his cars, in my opinion, this one, the T50, and also the McLaren F1, as being almost growers, not showers. In the supercar realm.
What? So wear like a bright orange Lamborghini would be a shower.
It would be an absolute sort of, you know, veiny cock ring of a
car. And quite honestly, it could have a 2-litre Pinto and be one-wheel drive. But it sort of wouldn't matter for a lot of the people who buy them, as long as it will make a lot of noise while going through the city centre of London or Dubai or somewhere.
Yeah, it's your ultimate male peacock with the fan of feathers, doing that shimmy, the turn and the shimmy. You do the turn and the shimmy, don't you?
So yeah.
It's being driven everywhere in first gear just for all the noise. No, the person that's bought it is probably not interested in how fast it can go. It's just all about the rinse, the first gear rinse. And it's the peacock shimmy. So I mean, what I was trying to say to him constructively is that it's a bit like when you go into a gallery and you see an interesting painting, but you can't work out necessarily what's the most interesting element at first, and you can't work out whether it's beautiful or just really interesting. And that was what I was trying to say to him, because I don't think the T50 is a pretty car, but it's really interesting, and obviously proportionally it's unusual because of the three abreast seating thing. And the McLaren F1, I've never thought it was a handsome car as such, but I've always thought it was, again, interestingly proportioned. Obviously the joy for me is in the packaging. And then this T50, I reckon, is the best looking car of the three.
Oh, the 33?
Yeah, I think his new 33, which is obviously it's a million quid cheaper than the T50.
Bargain.
So therefore bargain. And
it's inspired, isn't it, by sort of 60s sports cars, the Alfa 33 Stradale.
Yeah, there's a bit of Stradale in there.
Which is one of my favourite cars of all time to look at. I mean, I bet they're horrid to drive, but just as a piece of design, I just think they're really fantastic.
Yeah. And I thought the front end, because I said to him, I said I was a bit reluctant to ask or to admit which bits of other cars I thought I could see in it. And I said the front end reminded me a bit of a 718 RSK, the Porsche race car.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those cars, I think. I mean, they've launched it in silver, which is a very safe, conservative colour, isn't it? It's not exactly mad orange or crazy purple or...
Yeah. It's sort of vanilla ice cream, isn't it? But then, you know, sometimes vanilla ice cream is nice.
It is nice, and that's the thing. I think it's about going, yes, we're just going to let you kind of drink it in and savour it for a while. And then, and I thought you've got to almost stand there and look at it for half an hour, and then you start seeing these swoops and these details where you go, yeah, that's actually really quite considered. Damn you, Gordon, you with your camtail.
Because as a general rule, the styling models for future cars are usually painted silver when they're shown off to management to get sign-off, aren't they? And I think it is so that you're looking at the design, not the colour. You're not getting too distracted.
Yes, and maybe it's because it's not too led by colour.
It's not really... Silver's not really a colour, is it? I suppose it's a shade.
I think it probably is. Yeah.
So that's. But
my wife hates silver cars.
Really?
If she was in management and a car was presented to her in silver, she'd just go, no, you're not building that. No. That's it. On to the next one. Right, I'll see you in 2 months.
I don't care. Okay.
Listen.
There's a story about when they did the MGF, and I presume in all the styling stuff, normally it was done in silver. Though actually I've seen pictures of a lot of red styling models, which is quite unusual. And then when BMW bought Rover and they turned up and they were like, oh, we've been working on a sports car, actually, they showed it off to them and it was sort of like bright lipstick red, almost pink.
Oh.
And then apparently the German management slightly freaked out. We're like, what the fuck is this? And then Rover people sensed that they'd spooked them a little bit. So when they came back the next time to have another look at it, they'd resprayed it British Racing Green, and the Germans all went, oh, yes, it's perfect. It's absolutely great. It's the same car. Just
really?
Larry colour.
There you go, you see. So, yeah, I think, I mean, it was under also, you know, when you see a car under the lights of a motor show, those lights are strategically placed and they're there to kind of bounce brightness off different surfaces and accentuate curves or louvers or whatever. I think that's the T33 was in a room which was like that, which helped because the silver kind of brought out those elements. But no, I have to say I really enjoyed it, and I also enjoyed the fact that this building that Gordon Murray Automotive have bought in Salle is the old BOC building, and I think Bristol might have been owned by Bristol Cars, wasn't it?
And the same group, yeah, owned them.
That's
yeah.
right. That's right. And it's so 80s. It's like a very very new then 1981 Centre Parks. I absolutely love it.
Has it not got? I've seen pictures and aerial photos of it. Has it got sort of like little kind of hubs that spur off a central hub?
That's it.
So long yes. corridors with then these little sort of like pods at the end.
Yeah.
Are they hexagonal?
I think they're hexagonal brick with a dome top, like an observatory. Yeah. And I believe they are to mimic a molecule of oxygen.
Oh,
that was the whole wanky approach on that side of things. Yeah, I know, and it is interesting because it's been semi-derelict, so it looks like it could be the sort of backdrop for a slightly apocalyptic, creepy film. But then you realise that in the depths of one of the buildings is some of the work that's being done for, and of course they're revamping the whole site with a test track and everything. The test track's the first thing they're going to finish there, and the T33 is going to be built there. Of course, when you say T33 again, the name, I keep thinking of a lesser known Terminator robot that we haven't seen the details for yet. Because
it's just an admin robot.
Do you know, it's just
it
a really
just processes
efficient,
expense
just
claims.
Extremely
I mean, it's,
efficient robot.
Yeah,
and light.
It's really necessary because otherwise, you know, everyone will be demanding to know why their receipts got lost. But no, the T33 processes expenses very efficiently.
Yeah.
Gets them paid at the end of the month, and you know where you are with it.
And
not
it can
exciting,
open and close doors for people very quickly but quietly.
Yes.
So if someone's coming towards reception in a building, the T33 whips open a door, but you can't even hear it, but it whips it open so fast and then shuts it behind you.
Maybe like that BOC building, the T33 robot was designed in the 80s, and one of its fingers is a cigarette lighter, but they've blanked it off because that's no longer necessary. At the time, it seemed really cool that it could light fags for people with its finger. But it's like, you know, the way that there was an era when cars still had an ashtray with a lighter in it, and then they went, ooh, people don't really want this anymore. So they just sort of put a blank in the lighter hole and labelled it as a socket.
That's
but
right.
You went, nah, that's a lighter, isn't it? Well, it's that's the same with the T33 robot. Why has it got... What's that?
What's it
hold? There's a blanking plug
finger.
On one of its fingers that doesn't match the rest of the metalwork. Oh, yeah,
no, don't worry about it.
Have a thing. Don't worry
about that, mate. Don't worry about that.
I think that because of its ability to light cigarettes with one of its fingers, it starred in a martini advert in 1986.
But, oh yeah,
and then
yeah,
but wearing a bow tie, even though it's a robot.
Yeah, and they did a giveaway of some toys for children. You could cut out packets of some sort of food stuff and send away. Do you remember you used to send away tokens and get an average toy after about a year of saving?
Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Which, or I was reminded last week by something I saw on Twitter about the Weetabix characters. Do you remember those in the, I guess it was the 80s, maybe?
Yes, the 90s. It was the 80s.
They had a band. They basically had a ska band.
That's right, because you could send away for music. And I, one of the first things that I ever got, my first single was a Weetabix, was a single from Weetabix. I probably told you, because me and my brother saved up feverishly. We would compete about how much Weetabix we could eat. And this is weird that you brought this up, because I had Weetabix this morning for the first time in several years, because it's the only...
What?
It's the only cereal that's left in the cupboard. We're out of cereal. Oh. I blame Brexit. But actually, I don't blame Brexit, because Weetabix actually grown about 6 miles from my house. But needless to say...
Grown?
Well, it's grown. There's a field, a couple of fields, which I drive past, and there's a big sign in them saying, this is being grown for Weetabix.
Really?
So unless they're lying, and it's not at all, it's just being grown.
They must need more than a couple of fields. I mean, my boy, who's 7, could bang away 6 Weetabix on the bounce when he's hungry. It's like, that's half the field gone already, surely. There must be more fields, but it's nice that they label them, so you know what the... I'd wish they'd do that more.
What, like you're looking at a field that's going to be... A pit of bread.
Yeah. These pigs are going to be wool sausages soon.
Yeah.
Or at least their legs and arseholes are.
All of the pigs' bottoms you can see in this field are going to be
going
in
to be
your...
cheap. Cheap corner shop sausages.
No name slim sausages soon.
Yes. Slender. The slim panatella cigar of sausages. You know those? Mm. Let's go back to the T-33 car. Because
what, not the robot with the lighter thing?
Yeah, not the robot. I think we've covered the robot. It basically, a brief acting career in the 80s, gave it all up, just went and got an office job, and now it processes accounts for other robots. But the car, I've only seen pictures of it, but
yeah,
I thought it is very nice looking. But I was curious to see it in real life. But it's, apart from it being £1 million cheaper than the T50,
yeah,
it's sort of more... does Gordon Murray say it's a GT car, or is he not going that far?
No, not massively comfortable with that term. He,
which is ironic, because GT cars often are quite comfortable.
Yeah, he says it's not really much more comfortable than the T50, because he says the T50 is a comfortable car. So,
clever.
He makes a point of building cars that have quite a high ride height. Or average ride height, so that they don't need any kind of raising kits for going over speed ramps and going up American driveways and all that bobbins. Mm. And it has a few sacrificial suspension parts for if you do go up a particularly savage American driveway at a friend's house. And he was. I even talked to him about the servicing costs. He was making a point of the fact it's really cheap to service. So it's basically a really expensive car. But once you've got it, the tyres are cheap because they're not specialist really. The oil services are cheap. I think...
this you don't experience. No, actually, you can just have it serviced at any Renault dealer. What?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's £100 fixed price service. Sure.
I love that, though. That was what I always loved about the VX220 Turbo, was the fact that it's so leery, and it's like, yeah, it's the price of an Astra to service. Okay, cool, brilliant, love that.
I wonder if that's the case with the Ford GT... Where it's Fiesta price servicing. I'm gonna guess no, but
it's Mondeo V6.
Price. It's the sort of there's like three tiers of Ford servicing, and it's tier three.
That's right.
For most things, but
faults. Yeah, exactly.
Faults.
Do you know what? It was nothing but joy to speak to him. I have to say, and we went off piste a few times. We ended up chatting for quite a long time. And if anybody hasn't seen it, I would love to point them towards my YouTube channel video, which is quite a deep dive. But the car is cheaper because it's more conventional in so much it's got sided steering wheel. It's left or right hand drive. It's being federalised, which is costing them something like £22 million, I think he said. So it's their first mass production car, he said, with inverted commas, with a smile on his face. But it's still it's 100 units.
But he's always said he won't make any more than 100 of any of these things he's coming up with, hasn't he? And so it's, but so
that's his promise to fans.
But that, so I, that's a, what's the, what does it give you that the T50 doesn't, or that the T50 gives you that this doesn't? Apart from, I suppose, the central position, which I guess is just a draw for a lot of people, isn't it? Because of the F1
it is a
heritage.
Draw. And it changes the entire proportions of the cabin and the of the car. So that, you know, the bonnet, the length of the bonnet, the shape of the nose, he made a point, he said, I've had T33 in my head for about 25 years since finishing, well, more than 30 years since he launched the McLaren F1, of course. But he said, I wanted to do one with lots of Coke bottle. That was the sort of phrase that he referred to. And he says, you can't really do Coke bottle on a three abreast seater because you need to maximise the cabin. You can't lean in the glass house too much because you're trying to get headroom and shoulder room in for all three occupants. So he talked me around the car in that way that Gordon does. And it's just, didn't assume I knew everything, didn't assume I knew nothing, just... really cool. This is the same engine as the T50, but 1,000 RPM lower limit, so 11.1 rather than 12.1. I mean, wow. Bloody hell. Yeah, I know.
It's practically, you'll be able to drive it like a minicab.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just going to short shift it at no more than 1,800
by 28
RPM.
Miles an hour. Yeah.
I'd love it if someone buys one and refuses to ever rev it above 5. Just and you're like, I think it's the wrong car for you.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's slight. You could say it is slightly detuned engine. What, 615 PS? I think it is. Rather than 663, something like that. But, I mean, it's not, like, blatantly cheapened or... So, same engine to save on their R&D costs that they've absolutely rinsed getting that V12 Cosworth engine through. Mm. He says it will do 30 to the gallon.
Really?
Yeah, with a range of about 450 miles. And he said, we've tested that. He said, I'm not just plucking those figures out of the air. And
I just drove to Carlisle yesterday for no reason at all and... Let me tell you, I almost made it all the way back.
Do you know what? If Gordon Murray was a politician, at least you'd know that you were going to get the truth out of him. If he was collared in a corridor, and was like, hang on, you said that this is supposed to do that. And he was like, yeah, it will do. It will do.
I've got the diagrams.
Yeah, I'll show you here.
I've charts.
I joked with him, because when he was reeling all these things off, and he was saying how good his new team is, that they're probably the best team he's ever worked with. And he said, but I don't do any CAD stuff. I don't know how to do CAD. I've still got a drawing board. I still sketch with a ballpoint pen. And I paused and I said, I bet you like Post-its, don't you, Gordon? I bet you like Post-its. And he paused, reached into his back pocket and pulled out like 4 Post-its. And he showed them close up to me. They had the smallest, neatest writing on them. I almost couldn't see them with my eyes.
Did you look closely there? One of them said, optimise rear view mirror positioning, buy milk, feed cats.
Oh, it was just...
Ring dentist.
it was just brilliant. I have to say, it was great. So, yeah, my favourite angle of the T33 is the rear three-quarter, I think. The back end. Back end is... The front end, the front end takes longer to grow on you to maybe appreciate its proportions, and maybe you have to stand and actually be there with it.
Mm.
But the back end, I think, is quite something. Back three-quarters. And it's got this crazy... You'll appreciate it as a man that digs Formula One... It's got ram air scoop from the roof, like a, but it's shaped like a 70s F1 air box. So, and it's attached to the engine, so it moves with the engine, even though it's very, very flush to the sort of Targa-style roof of the car.
Why? He said, is it a Targa roof on that?
No, I don't think... But he said they're going to make two other variants of the T33. So they're probably going to do some sort of spidery...
Yeah.
version.
Convertible and the diesel, I imagine.
Yeah, the TDI will be on its way. Yeah, exactly.
T33DI.
Well, no, Gordon sort of took me to one side and said, look, we're going to do a much, much cheaper version. So it's going to look exactly the same, 3D printed out of Hessian. And then it's going to have a Mazda ZDOS 6 platform underneath.
Yeah. So if you know anyone selling a low mileage ZDOS 6, do get in touch. We're going to be combing the area.
GMA is going to be absolutely vacuuming them up.
That's why we're based in Surrey, because they sold a lot of ZDOS 6s around here.
Well, that's the only reason why they've relocated at Grutbar.
Huge in the Guildford area. So. Yeah, that's it. I think the T33 Popular Plus is probably going to be the hit of the range, because it'll be just so much more affordable at $14,995.
I've got to say, he said they had an awful lot of angry people when they sold out of T50s within 48 hours.
Really?
And some of the customers were...
Like how angry?
He said we've been fielding angry potential customers for months. He said, and it's odd because some of these people they were talking to for almost a year before the car was released, because they'd expressed interest, or maybe they were previous owners of McLaren F1s or some other high-end vehicles. And he said some of them were, they just didn't believe him when he said they've sold out. You know, basically, you've had all this time to think about it. You didn't press the button. There aren't any more. They've all been allocated. And, of course, those sorts of people can sometimes, they just don't believe that it can't be possible.
Well, if you've got multiples of millions to spunk on a car, you're probably used to getting what you want, aren't you?
I would have thought so, yeah.
I know someone who's ordered a T50.
Do you?
I mean, I do know them. I don't know them well, but I sort of, I know them.
Is he or she old or young?
About my age, I guess, or your age, maybe.
I reckon I know who it is.
I think you would.
There's only one person I can think of who realistically is. I don't think it's I don't think it's one of your Grand Tour mates.
No, it's not. I'll say right now, it's not. I don't think they're in that league. No. I mean, they've done very nicely for themselves, but I don't think
they can spend £1.5 million on a car, one car, can they? Can they?
Well, hang on. What's the T50?
1.3.
But isn't that then plus taxes? So you have to add VAT. So you've got to add another sort of £250,000, haven't you, in VAT?
Yeah, which is just tiring, isn't it? It's just tiring.
So it's over £1.5 million. So then, but then what? The T33 is going to be what?
Well, that is
47 grand. Oh, the T33 is one and a half.
The T50 is two and a half or two point six. Okay. Yeah. So it's a smidge of the price.
It really is.
Absolute smidge. It's 1,090 kilos. So it is over a ton. It's about the same as a Jimny, actually.
People rightly are very excited by the Alpine A110 being a light car, and it is.
Yeah.
But it's not that light, is it? I mean, and the A110, one of the shocking things about first seeing an A110 in real life, I thought, was just how tiny it is.
I tripped over one the other day.
Yeah. I accidentally kicked it, and it went skittering underneath a piece of furniture. It was quite embarrassing.
You know when you go over a sort of a raised threshold from one room to another and you don't quite pick your foot up enough? Well, that's like an Alpine 110. and you can stub your toe quite badly if it's in the morning and you haven't got socks or slippers on.
There's a lot of Alpine A110s, of which Gordon Murray is one, isn't he?
He is one.
They just can't remember where they left the car, and then they pull the fridge out to clean the fluff out from underneath it. But wouldn't you know, it's under there.
Oh, it's there. Gosh.
It's all covered in that mysterious fluff.
It's covered in old milk, half a mouse, and dog toy.
There's mouse poo and a single sticky Cheerio stuck to it. I'm excited for the T33 in a way, because I sort of prefer the way it looks. And again, I've only seen pictures, but I prefer the way it looks. And I'm sure it'll be excellent, because Gordon Murray generally is good at this sort of stuff.
It's exciting. And it's not just that. It's exciting about this whole new site that they're on. That's one thing that I really enjoyed. And when I turned up there, And I was doing my sort of COVID test in the car park, which is rock and roll. I noticed there was an ox parked under a lean-to just at the side of the building. I was like, oh, that's cool. I thought it was a fire engine at first, and I walked closer and it was a red ox.
And that's ask him about it?
I didn't get a chance to ask him about the ox. I asked him about a few other things. We talked about Honda Insights, bit of Jimny, a few other things. But
what's his feeling on the Jimny?
Well, he's got one.
Has he?
Yeah, he owns one. And I didn't.
No way.
I didn't put that in the final edit of the T33 check because there was so much T33 to fit in. But I might use it. Yeah, he bought one. He said he uses it. He sort of uses it. I forget how he worded it, but he sort of said he uses it up and down his drive. But I was trying to work out what, like, how long's your drive? Or
well, unless he's moved house, I know his drive because I've been to his house.
Oh, you have, haven't you? You absolute slag.
Because I did a story with him for Evo because I had a smart roadster as a long-termer and he used to have a smart roadster.
He's still got it.
Has he?
He's still got it. He talked about it. Because I referenced it, because I said, I love the fact that you've had a smart roadster. He said, but I've still got it. He said, I daily drove it for 16 years. And then when I worked out how much I would be given for it if I sold it, he said, I just thought I'd keep it. So he's still got it. I don't know whether it's under a lean-to on the premises.
The tyres are really flat.
I would love to buy Gordon Murray's.
Imagine Gordon Murray's, because he's probably lightened it somehow as well. We did talk about this when...
I drilled the shit out of it.
When I went to, everything's got holes in, dashboard, the lot. I went to, because that's the thing, I got in touch with him. I said, would you be willing to have a chat to me about Smart Roadster and your experiences of it? And he went, yeah, come to my house. So I did. And he had a go in my car, which was a Brabus version, and then gave some sort of a good download of his thoughts on how it compared to his regular one.
His non-Brab.
But what was great was he did do a little bit of a sort of, here's what I would change about it. And one of the things he did say was, he went, this roof system is just sort of needlessly complicated. It's great to be able to put the roof back, but, you know, with the electric roof version, you've got these side rails and they come out and that's probably pointless. So why aren't they just sort of welded in and then they could be lighter because they wouldn't have a clip mechanism on them. And he went through this whole thing. It was fascinating.
Yeah.
And he also went into sort of like sort of slightly wistfully started talking about how, because of the sluggishness of the gearbox, he was like, you know, if you had sort of proximity sensors on the paddles that could sort of pre-prime the next change, maybe it would speed things up. And you could see him sort of idly wondering about how to make that better. But he was clearly a fan of the car, even though it's a bit
flawed. Yeah.
Flawed, yeah. But that's really interesting. He's got a Jimny. His drive is quite long, but it's not so long and hilly that you might need a Jimny.
I think he might
in the winter.
It. Yeah.
It's down a lane as well. So in the winter it might get, and it's in the hills in Surrey. So
I think he probably uses it as his sort of like around and about garden centre runs, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But he said, oh,
just
said
popping
just really
to the tip.
It.
Oh, got all this titanium I need to get rid of.
I was going to say, I've got a load of really, really light black bin liners that I've got to get rid of.
They've leaked again. These bin liners, I never thought I'd say this, but these bin liners are too light.
Talking of which,
some heavy, it's obviously juicy ones.
This is an absolute pursuit of lightness. When I sent you that message last night, I was hoping that the next tea car by Gordon Murray was going to be a tea bucket hot rod, but just needlessly dangerous and light. So it's the, and when the stats are announced, everyone's like, I just don't think that's even possible. I just can't see how.
You can't have a car that can carry people that weighs 205 kilos. It's just, that's no, it's not possible. Well, I think you'll find it is, actually.
It's got the lightest. The automatic gearbox in the T33, because it comes manual as standard, but it has an also made by X-Track Auto, paddle auto, that he says is the fastest shifting, lightest auto box in the world.
Is it auto or double clutch? Like, what's it?
Yeah,
automated manual.
Well, it's pre-selector.
Bus?
Yeah, but quicker. Yeah.
Pre-selector. Now, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, actually, was last week, you know, you said about sports people being interviewed on the TV. They just come on
the Vitek,
the hotter cams.
Yes.
And I think, well, I realised what it sounds like to me is certain types of old bus.
Oh, you know, yes, how, yes.
And I you know, there's a certain kind of, if you're sitting at the back where the engine is on a lot of buses, you know, when you're at sort of school days, maybe it was like a Leyland Olympian or something.
Yeah.
And it'd be like, they do that thing where they go,
well, that's right, that's
and they,
right.
And they do a real sort of Glenn Hoddle being asked about his results kind of, well, I think that in fairness, the boys play pretty well.
Actually, that's, I get a lot of that from Heathrow long stay when I used to do a lot of flying, which feels like a long time ago. You'd get the long stay bus into the terminal, and that would always have that kind of gearbox.
Yes. Also, they drive them like bastards, don't they? They get out of the car park onto the access road, and they absolutely gun them. So you get a lot of...
Oh, it's like a hydraulic... I think it's a hydraulic... Isn't it hydraulic?
Well, I'll be honest. I remembered this last week after we'd recorded the last podcast, and I then started trying to look it up, and I was brushing my teeth while watching bus videos on YouTube, and I suddenly thought, I hope my wife doesn't walk in. What are you looking at on your phone? Nothing. Were you looking at videos of a Leyland National being driven along? Might have been.
Oh,
I couldn't quite...
You're starting to... You're getting like me, where you've got to put something on during the brushing the teeth, having the wee before
bed. Yeah, you see, I don't normally do that. I did think of you. I thought, this is the point at which Johnny would be watching an Iron Maiden live in concert.
I was doing it last
Can I
night.
Play with Madness live in Dusseldorf in 98?
It was.
Because I can't hear a lot. That's the problem. I ended up holding the phone right to my ear to try and hear bus gear changes because of the electric toothbrush making so much noise.
Oh, because it's vibrating through your jawline, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but I was wondering, there must be some bus heads who listen to this, and maybe they could set us straight, because that's it. There must be. There is a sort of a particular kind of... Is it a fluid flywheel type of thing?
Yeah, I will ask my brother. He'll give me the full Gordon Murray-esque download. In fact, you know, you mentioned, was it a Leyland Olympian?
Yes.
Well, maybe that's why sports people talk like that. It's paying homage to an old coach. Gearbox, and that's when they're taught to do PR and public speaking, they always reference back to the gearbox of an elderly coach. Maybe that's what they do because of its namesake.
But that's it just reminded me, because I think I don't know half enough about this, but I have a feeling that it might be because those buses have pre-selected gearboxes.
I'm pretty sure they do,
and a fluid flywheel of some sort, and that is why they make that weird noise.
I used to go to school in a coach with a pre-selector box, because I remember looking at the little box, the gate on a tiny little... It's a tiny little box with a gate on it on the arm at the right-hand side of the driver.
Yes. I was fascinated by it, because it was an open gate, wasn't it?
Totally,
like on a
open
Ferrari.
Oh, yeah, look, mega. Yeah. And it was quite a short, stubby stick. It wasn't a long manual wand like they have in the coaches, the traditional ones. And I always used to think, oh, that's neat. And our driver of that particular one was called Ken, who wore grey slip-ons. I wonder what... I don't even know what car he used. And his name was Ken. He was a very nice guy. He had a flat top, grey slip-ons, and he had a bracelet, quite a flat, linky bracelet, which I think said Ken on it. So it was textbook coach driver with the short sleeve shirt, of course, even in winter. And the pre-selector box is just by the sliding window, isn't it? Because you can slide the window back, because he slides the window to say hello to any other bus driver or to swear at someone that had parked in the wrong place going through one of the villages. It's funny what you remember, isn't it?
It's funny what you remember, isn't it? Do you know, I had that this morning because I suddenly remembered that in 1985, Car Magazine ran a competition to win a Porsche 924S.
Oh.
They put that car on the cover because it was like, you know, it was that car had always been seen as sort of the runt of the family. And then the S put in the inverted commas proper Porsche engine and sort of became a bit more serious. And I remember Carr being quite impressed with it, to the extent that they gave one away in a competition.
Yeah, what, we love it and so much we don't want to keep it.
Yeah.
That kind of
I wonder
of
how
thing.
this came about. It's weird because there are enough people still around, Steve Cropley, Gavin Green, all of these people who were on Carr in its mid-80s heyday who might remember this, but the giving away of a car, I mean, it was an expensive car,
yeah,
even for an entry-level Porsche. So I presume Porsche did them a deal or gave it to them. I don't know. But the tiebreaker...
Bloody hell, you imagine that now.
Well, I know. You just sort of, what would it be? Base model Boxster. There's a story about a magazine once giving away a car, and then for some reason the person who won it didn't collect it or something, and it just ended up gathering dust in their car park.
What?
Yeah, it was all a bit dodgy, but no names, no pack drill. It was a long time ago.
We used to give away cars on Fifth Gear years ago when
yeah,
I first started.
Yeah, you did, didn't you?
Yeah, and they used to get thousands, hundreds of thousands of entries. And it was always sad when they were given away to people who just entered a competition and didn't really care about the car. And a lot of the runners and people like that used to, or some of the directors, would deliver the cars to their house. And one of them, I'm not saying who, one time, one car never arrived at the competition winner's house because it may or may not have been completely destroyed on a back road by because allegedly a bus pulled out in front of it.
Oh, did it?
Allegedly.
One of those.
Yeah.
Well, its pre-selected gearbox got jammed.
Oh, that's right. And it ended, it's that, and that it terrible
veered
thing.
Veered across the road.
You realise you're in a Boxster Porsche and you're spinning wildly through hedges and ditches.
All to avoid a bust. They were second-hand cars you used to give away on Fifth Gear.
Yeah, we used to give away clean second-hand cars. We have given away, or had given away, brand new. Might have given away a brand new Fiat 500 when they first came out. So like a lower priced car, but that was fresh at the time. But we used to, I mean, I remember one, we gave away a Tommy Mackinnon Mitsubishi Evo that was like the best one you could buy in the country.
Yeah.
And they bought it to flog it on, and everyone was like, this car's too good, we shouldn't give this away. And once we gave away a Ferrari. The person that won it lived in a high-rise flat dodgy area.
What kind of Ferrari?
I think it was a 308.
Oh.
I think
this
it
was back when they were not worth.
This was when they were, you know, when they were 20 grand maybe at the most. Mm. When one of the people from the show delivered it to their house, they were not bothered about it. They were like, "Yeah, if you just park it somewhere down there, there's a load of parking spaces if you can find one, put it in there." And they were like, "Oh, can we just get a soundbite from you and like a shot of you by the car?" And they're like, "Yeah, what are you going to do with the car?" And they went, "I'm going to put it on eBay tomorrow." Like, "Oh, okay, thanks. All right, bye then." It's really sad because apparently it's in excellent condition. And the person from Fifth Gear walked away and they just said, "I bet you that's going to get vandalised tonight." It's very sad. But yeah.
It's like I once watched an episode of Holmes Under the Hammer. This might happen a lot on that show. I haven't watched it that much, but
you
I watched
so
one
have.
Where. But you know, it's usually they want to focus on someone who's, you know, buying a house at auction because they want to live in it, and it's their first house they bought or something. There's a good backstory to it, and there's one guy bought it. He's just a professional landlord, and then the presenter's having to really work hard and go, "But it does look like the roof's going to need repairing. I mean, that's going to be a challenge, isn't it?" "Not really, I've got a contract, I'll do that tomorrow." And, I mean, obviously, you say you want to rent it out, but it's going to need repainting from top to bottom. "Yeah, my painters are coming in tomorrow as well, no problem at all."
In fact, they've already started behind you. Look behind you.
Yeah, exactly, it really was like that. And then it had to be, you know, they want a kind of... Well, the good news is, you know, they're trying to build in some jeopardy, and there was no jeopardy. It does look like really this woodwork could do with... "Yeah, I know. My carpenter's coming and he's going to do that." It was just like there were no problems for this guy. It'll all be done. I'll have people in here by Friday. And he did. And they kind of went, "Well, he said he'd have people in here by Friday. That sounded like a tall order, but here they are." And it just... There was nothing. They hadn't... He was giving them nothing. There was no story. And it's just like that. "What are you doing with the car?" "It's going on eBay." "Oh.
Yeah,
oh, that's not a happy ending, is it? That's just you trousering 18 grand.
Well, that's the problem. It was a real sad emoji face moment of going, "Oh, so you didn't really want that car, did you?" Whereas other people couldn't believe it. You know, to them it was life-changing. I've just won a car that I... You know, the one of them I think was when the... Not long after the Mini Cooper S came out.
Yeah.
And I think they might have given a brand new one away. And they were blown... for six, almost crying. And I think that's
well, that's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's
cool.
Brought joy.
I'd love
to. Hey, actually, those original Mini Cooper S's were a good footballer being interviewed car with the automatic. Do you remember those? Because the supercharger whine
Oh,
with
yeah.
that not very good automatic gearbox that they had on those.
Was it?
Very
that
whiny.
That was Tim Henman
peak.
After a particularly stressful yeah. match.
Yeah, it was challenging. I hit the ball. I don't remember Tim Henman ever saying, I hit the ball. I think that was always taken.
Tim Henchman.
You could infer that from what he was saying as a professional tennis player. but where were we? Oh, yeah. So talking of competitions, the Car Magazine competition to give away a Porsche 924S, the tiebreaker that you had to do was to write a limerick that incorporated the word Porsche.
Right.
And I can still remember... I suddenly remember this because you said it's amazing the things you remember. I realised I can still remember the winning limerick for that competition, which was 37 years ago.
Bloody hell, Richard.
A streamlined young lass from Tyree, when asked to reveal her CD, said, "Might I inquire if what you require is that of my Porsche or me?"
What?
I can still remember that, and that's really... I mean... Can't remember.
I mean, I'm impressed with that. I'm very
I can also remember, well, because we entered that competition. I say we, because me and my mum sat down, and because I was like 10 at the time, and I was like, "Mum, Dad, look, you can win a Porsche," and so I sat down with my mum and we wrote a limerick and entered that competition and didn't win, but I can still remember that as well. I thought, in retrospect, it was quite good. Our entry. It was an exceedingly rich banker's daughter, while speeding along in her Porsche, span round once or twice on a patch of black ice and pranged what her daddy had bought her.
Oh, I like that.
That's quite good, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's good. That's really
didn't
good.
Didn't win the Porsche, though. So, anyway, there we go. So, shit that clutters your mind.
Well, if I know of a 924 in a hedge in Cardiff, if you want one. I could probably get it for you at a reasonable price, if that was of interest.
Any updates on that? Since I think it's one of your biggest stories of recent times, isn't it?
I've just been contacted by a Chilean newspaper for an interview about it, weirdly.
What?
It's true. Honestly, I've just checked my emails this morning.
What?
Got to speak to a Chilean newspaper. I don't know why. I think it's the white 912 has sold. The 911, the red car, which I don't actually think is a 911, I think it's a 912 with 911S running gear, is
right.
being, there's a lot of bartering going on there. The MX-5s, I think, are reserved, and the Mercedes 190s, I think, will end up being scrapped, or you know, they might make donors. I don't think they'll book. And I don't think anyone's pounced on the 924s yet, although the bloke that bought the 912 thinks he's going to have to buy one of them because it's in his way. And if not, which I thought was quite funny.
Well, on the basis that if he tries to remove it, it will break, and then he'll have to pay for it anyway.
Yeah, I think it's such an involved process getting the cars out safely. That I think he'll probably have to buy one. He has a number of Porsche projects anyway, so he's restores cars himself.
Oh.
I think I'll probably buy it, assess it when I get it home, sell it on as a project. Because he said, "How bad are the 924s?" I said, "I think you might make one good one out of the two, but..." How
these are the 924s that you fell through the roof.
I fell
of one
through
of them.
The sunroof of one of them and thought I'd lacerated my legs, and I didn't dare look down. And then I realised that it was actually it's a composite roof sunroof in those, which I didn't know. You learn things new every day, but I can tell you that it's a glass fibre roof, and I hadn't lacerated my legs, and that sadly, I think you could make one good one, but they're both 924 turbos. One's a first generation and one's a second, and I didn't realise there are a couple of differences. They didn't make the first gen for very long. And one of them is the first gen one is fire damage, so it's only good for some select parts, I think. Or you could use the shell for racing. I mean, you could make a racing car if you wanted.
Yeah.
They do race them, don't they?
Yeah.
So
The 924, that many, many, many years ago on Top Gear, we did a cheap Porsches challenge back when you could get front-engined old Porsches for not much money at all.
£2,000, yeah.
Yeah, and Hammond bought a 924 And that car, as far as I know, still exists and was bought by one of our team and his uncle, and they used it to hill climb.
Really?
And I think his uncle still hill climbs it.
Quite nearly did a CVT. Really? Yeah.
That's an amazing...
That's good to know. That's good
so,
to know.
So, yeah, that's, they definitely have... You know, because of the transaxle gearbox, they're so lovely and balanced.
Well, that's
the
thing, isn't it? I mean, like, I don't think I could do a 924, but I could do a 944.
I was thinking this because of something came up about 94s, which led me to suddenly remember that I can recall limericks from the 80s, which were quite troubling. But I was because of 94s being in my mind, I was suddenly thinking I'd love to have a go in one. I've never driven one. And I wonder if they're actually sort of really quite nice.
I bet they are all right. I just feel like for a long time, and listeners can, by all means, if there's listeners who have a 924 or a positive 924 experience, do write to us. Yeah. But
mark your emails, positive 924 experience.
Yes,
because two more from them later.
Because they were so damn cheap for a long time, but also 914s were about the same price for a long time. And of course, the 914 mid-engined Volkswagen-derived bit. So, again, a bit of a mongrel Porsche, but I love the style and the sort of silhouette of the 914. So in my head, I was always like, if I had that money and I was going to buy a lower-end, lower-ranking Porsche, I'd get a 914. Problem is 914s have gone expensive now. It's a real shame.
Yeah, they have.
And it annoys me because I wish I'd... As business people say, I wish I'd pulled the trigger on one earlier.
Oh, don't! Yeah, it drives me nuts.
I wish I'd drawn back
the trigger.
I wish I'd drawn back the bow.
yes, I wish.
and fired the arrow at a 914.
It's such. I pulled the trigger. It irritates me that
I know.
One. And
it's
you
just
see
a click
it a lot.
Of a mouse, isn't it? It's just click and collect.
Exactly. And it's also the smaller and less interesting the item, the worse it sounds. Go, listen, guys, just wait here. I'm going to pop into that newsagent and pull the trigger on a packet of strong mints. Fuck off. But even when it's a car, it's just that sort of the most Blendic end of piston.
It is.
That is where I see it a lot.
That
is go, yeah, popped into my local Beamer dealer. Got some deals going on there. The 135, so I pulled the trigger there and then. And it's just, I can't abide that sort of, there's certain people who kick around on the internet who always have to make it sound like they're incredible deal makers wherever they go.
It's basically Alan Partridge online only, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I saw you on Twitter the other day, weren't you making the point that Alan Sugar sometimes comes across like one of those people who's made successful businesses despite being quite thick?
Yeah, completely.
I think you've got a point there, because the bit that always drives me nuts about Alan Sugar is that he clearly has prepared one-liners, but he's not very good at delivering them.
He's terrible at delivering them.
He makes you sound stupid.
There's a slight Donald Trump element of not really being able to formulate the sentence properly before it emerges from your mouth.
Well, again, Donald Trump. I don't believe Donald Trump is a bright man. But you know, it's sort of these great deal makers, Trump, Sugar, people on piston heads. I suspect it's just sheer sort of brute force.
Oh,
it's just being a cocky bell end that allows them to think they've got a good deal. And often they probably haven't. Or the person they're doing the deal with just goes, look, if I give you another 10 quid off, will you leave me alone?
Yeah, I'll pay you to leave. That's the ultimate deal maker. I'll annoy you to the point where you're actually throwing money at me in order to walk away. Right, Richard, I have seen what of you have done with off of your book writing. I think what you have done. I really like your business prospecting. I think you could be really good. If you come off of me with what around the office and all that, I reckon we could make some deals. This could be a multi-million pound deal, what off of you writing the books. Okay? Boring car trivia. You see, the problem with that, Richard, is it's boring. People don't buy boring books. You need to have a much better title, like Amazing Car Book. Yeah?
I've got it. Amstrad Car Trivia.
Yeah.
It's a winner.
By the way, everybody, I used to sell computers, and also I drive around in a Rolls Royce with not very many numbers on the number plate. Therefore, off of me being rich and all that, I've got authority. Yeah. P.S. I haven't thought about what I'm going to say before I say it. Yeah.
Except for these one-liners I've got written on a cue card. Your challenge was making jam. And you know what? You got into a real jam. Do you know what this jam-making challenge turned into? A sticky situation.
Oh, God, awful. It sounds like when a computer delivers.
Yeah, it is. Maybe that's it. Maybe he's got some khaki old Amstrad 486 machine that writes in one-liners in the back room.
I'd like it if he just...
The Amsgags. Come on, Amsgags, what have you got for me today? The challenge is opening a bird sanctuary. Yeah. Okay, thanks, brilliant. Well, the trouble with this bird sanctuary of yours, it did not take flight.
Oh, God.
Thanks, no. Amsgags.
Oh, I would love it if Alan Sugar ran a rally school in Wales, and but without any prior experience of performance driving. So he just gives all the one-liners, doesn't he? But sort of all jumbled
the
up.
The folly of the overconfident man. That's opening right. A business in a field he doesn't understand.
So he starts off...
Right, look, right, we got to go left, right? What?
I've got a fleet. I've heard that Fords have a rich history in rally. I've bought a fleet of probes. They've got roll cages in case you roll, you protect your head. Everyone's going out on this stage. Remember, you go in slowly, you come out slowly, and then if you want to go fast, you go fast where you feel it, you can go fast. Okay, so you do that. We'll put slick tyres on. If it looks muddy, we'll be okay. It's what we do in motorsport.
On that.
Go, Alan, have you...
This rallying challenge was a bleeding disaster. You left her out there on her own. Why weren't you rallying around?
Oh,
thanks,
gosh.
Sam Gags.
Yeah, well, somebody's following him with a cymbal and a snare drum, aren't they?
Would be fantastic. Instead of that sort of bed of dramatic music they put under those boardroom scenes, there is just a guy with a cymbal and a snare. bleeding, bloody bleeding.
I would like, in all honesty, I would like Alan Sugar to bankroll a drift team on the proviso that they teach him up to. Can you imagine? But he has to talk his way round as he's in a drift competition going door to door with, I don't know, Ireland's James Dean in a really like whistling SS14 Silvia, and he's still just talking utter nonsense as he's going round. So you got, you know, when you come off the throttle on those turbos, they go Alan's going, well, what are you going to do? I'm going to tip it in. I can't breathe properly. I can't even see, but I'm going in. Yeah, I'm letting go of the wheel, and it's just wheeling itself. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm making money as I'm driving. Yeah, I reckon that's what his line would be. You know, when he comes in and he does all right in the competition, they go, oh, Alan, you did surprisingly well considering your lack of drift experience. Go, well, the thing about me is my name's Lord Sugar. I actually was making money as I was driving around then because I've got so many things what I've invested in and all that. And so...
Do you know what bothers me about Sir Lord Alan Sugar is that his beard is not... He's not committed enough to having a beard. It's like either let it grow bigger so it's clearly a beard or have a shave and don't have a beard. At the moment, he's got that sort of... weird, like his face looks like a ball bag, and it's just I can't get on with it at all.
Is it a bit like when you put grass seed down but don't water it often enough, and so
it's sort of thin, yeah, thin and scrubby.
There's just areas of complete sparseness, and you're like,
well, that's,
and he'll walk in and he'll point at the barber, you. I employed you to, like, off of, like, tidy in my beard, and it looks a terrible mess.
It's like, from a distance, you go, oh, look, here comes Sir Lord Alan, and he hasn't got a beard. And as he gets closer, you're kind of narrowing your eyes, going, oh, has he? And then he finally comes up to you, go, oh, bleeding, bloody, bloody, bloody. And you go, oh, you have got a beard.
I think he should be just faint. Really sweary, and so he points at people like that. Oi, what? Jolie, you
the
are,
apprentice after dark.
Yeah, Jolie, you're a fucking prick. You need to get out. Alan, listen. Listen, you cock weasel. Climb out that door
right,
now.
Listen up,
whack
chops.
I will slap you with my bell. Get out. did you say Slord? Slord? Is he Srallan or Slord?
Srallan, Srallan, Slord. Slord Allen.
Slord.
I don't know.
Slord. Slord Allen.
He is definitely, I think, one of those people who is absolutely insistent that everyone calls him Lord Sugar.
Oh, completely, I bet. We're saying
he
all
gets
this.
Really cross
about,
if
I
you
hope
know.
He doesn't complain to us.
I'm gonna guess he doesn't listen, but who knows? Maybe he does. I'm bleeding bloody
listen,
cross about this.
It's a load of toss.
You pricks.
I think Alan should sponsor this podcast. I don't know what business he would. Maybe
with
his,
one of
his forthcoming
one of his
drifting.
Many products. That telephone that could do emails but was plugged into your landline. They could sponsor us. That would be the kind of sponsor this podcast would attract.
This podcast has been recorded on Srallan's email phone. Microphone.
No, you email. Can't take it with you. It's plugged into the wall.
Srallan.
Well, this is probably a good time to wrap things up and at least brief our lawyers on what might be coming their way.
I didn't even get a chance to talk about the possibility of Gordon Murray making body shells for cars out of prawn shells, because they're one of the lightest things I could possibly think of, and they often get discarded.
That's quite a good idea.
I was going to bring that up. Yeah, Gordon Murray's...
Did you suggest it to him?
No, I've just thought of it this morning, the prawn shell composite.
Well, keep your powder dry. Keep your prawn shells dry, because...
Yeah.
You could have a business idea there. Get Alan Sugar to bankroll
the GMA it. Prawn shell, yeah.
Yeah. That. In association with Amstrad. Right then, anyway, before we go, as usual, I have three things to tell you. They are, one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel, and if you've been paying attention, you'll know that the latest video on it is Gordon Murray talking about his new T33. This is very interesting indeed. Two, I have various books out, one of them called A Medium-Sized Book of Boring Car Trivia. Genesis in the Boring Car Trivia series. It's available from Amazon, or you can buy it from the Smith & Sniff merch shop. Go to the latebreakshow.com and follow the merch links to see that. There's also T-shirts and mugs and all manner of stuff.
There is. Stickers.
And the third thing that I have to tell you is that the original host of You've Been Framed was going to be Richard Madeley.
Wow, I did not know that.
And he... it's not that interesting, is it? But anyway, I just discovered it and I thought I'd stick it in there. He filmed the pilot and then they decided to give the job to Jeremy Beadle instead. So Madeley's
lost out. Got a bit of a VTech voice.
Mm. He does
he
do
goes
a little
high.
Bit. He gets a bit cammy just before he changes up.
Yeah.
No, he just goes, well, the thing is, Judy... Yeah. It's not Judy anymore, is it? She stays at home now. She's had enough.
No, she's bored
anyway.
Of it all.
All right, then. Well, we'll see you all again next week. Until then, thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Why are you laughing?
I don't know.
Now I'm laughing and I don't know why either. I'm laughing at you laughing. That's a sign of madness.
I'm Johnny Smith.